You can turn in your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews 11 is where we'll be. While you're doing that, I will just take a minute to tell you that when I was out of town last week in Wisconsin, preaching for a small church there that I've come to love and appreciate, a number of them came up to me and said, please tell your congregation how much we appreciate them letting you come. And I don't operate under any delusion that that's not true. I know that you all allow me to do that kind of work. You could throw fits about it, and you could cause trouble about it. But I have appreciated, but more than that, other people have appreciated the sacrifices that you make and the kindness that you show to share the great blessings we have in this congregation. Rick gets to travel, and so many others that go and help people in different places. And that just is, I just want you to know people are thankful about that to God for you. We're talking about faith this year. And as the chart above, though the fonts are messed up, will show, you might be able to read those. We've covered a few things already. And I want to remind you every time we come to this text, why it's such an important conversation. If you look at January up there, and if you remember the verses that we looked at, we learn in this context of Hebrews chapter 11 that faith is vital. That without faith, it's impossible to please God. It does not matter how much good you do. It doesn't matter what kind of things you believe to be so. Without faith, whatever it is that faith is, according to the Bible, it's impossible to please God. The other thing we learn in this text is it is by faith that we gain approval from God. Again, God's not going to look at my life and measure my life simply in the fact that I did good deeds. He's going to measure my life based on whether or not I had faith in Him. And finally, going backwards on that, we learn in this text that it is by faith that we have life. We live by faith. And that not only means something for our future about how we will live with God forever, but it means something about right now, that we truly find life and the meaning and the purpose and the joy in life because of our faith in God. And we've looked at a couple of examples of that now, Abel, Enoch, Noah. And every time that we've looked in this text, you'll notice that the faith of the one causes them to do something in context of their life. And so let's go ahead and look at Abraham here, starting in verse 8. I'm going to read beginning here, if you would follow with me. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead as that, at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. All these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance, and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, "In Isaac your descendants shall be called." He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. Stop there, if you would. I want you to notice that when we get to Abraham in chapter 11 here, there's a lot more said about Abraham than the previous folks. We read a couple verses about Abel, Enoch, and Noah. But now Abraham's got this large section. Sarah's in there too. We'll talk about Sarah next month. But on the chart, I've got this. By faith, Abraham obeyed. And I was going to just focus on that verse until I kept reading the text and reading the text. And I noticed that there's more than just one thing that said Abraham did by faith. So I want to show you those. First one is there in verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed. And we're going to talk about why that's so significant in just a minute. But now look at verse 9. By faith, Abraham lived as an alien in the land of promise. And that's a significant kind of statement that we're going to talk about why it's important in a minute. Skip down, if you would, to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. So here's what we have so far. By faith, Abraham obeyed. By faith, Abraham lived as an alien. By faith, Abraham offered up Isaac. And finally, look at verse 19. He considered that God is able. And I'm going to suggest that that's as much a by faith statement as any of them. By faith, Abraham considered that God was able. All right. I want you to go back through those four things. Abraham obeyed, he lived as an alien, he offered up Isaac, and he considered that God was able. And I want you to think about how faith was the reason he was able to do all of that in his life. And we'll just kind of try to picture it. Go back to verse 8 and let's talk about this. When it says that Abraham obeyed, I want you to notice that he obeyed when he was called. Do you see that? Tim made an interesting statement just a minute ago before the song. Tim speaks quietly. You have to listen closely. But it seems like everything Tim says is very important. You just have to pay attention. He said, Abraham did not live under tablets of commandments or something like that. He didn't have the Ten Commandments. The law had not been given yet. Yet people could still obey God when there was nothing written down for them to obey. What they had to obey was whatever God said they were to do. And you can't obey if there's no instruction. That's just not possible. There's a lot of people today that will say things like this. Well, I feel called to do this. I feel called to marry this person. I feel called to divorce this person. I feel called to move to this place. I feel called to do this ministry. I feel called to do this. I feel called to do that. I feel called to do all these things. And then when I answer the call, which oftentimes is actually just what I want, and I feel called because I feel like I want to do it, I've obeyed God. I want to be clear about this. Abraham knew exactly what God had called him to do. There wasn't a question. There doesn't seem to be any discussion with Sarah about, I think maybe God said this, or I kind of got this feeling like I'm supposed to move. God told Abraham what to do. And we as Christians, I really think, should go back to biblical teaching about the call of God for Christians. There's just certain things God's called us to leave and things to come to and things to do. We don't have to start trying to read some invisible cosmic roadmap from God to figure out what he's called us to. That said, and that aside. Look at the verse again. It says that he obeyed by going out. He obeyed by going out. Well, this focuses on the place he was going. But look close. It says that he didn't know where he was going. It's sort of like somebody telling you to go, and you just start going, but your natural question is, well, where am I going? Like, do I just start running? Do I start, like, what do I do? Where do I go? And God said, I will show you. If you go back to the book of Genesis, there's something very different about Abraham heading toward the promised land than the Israelites heading toward the promised land. You know what the difference is? God kept telling Israel, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. It's the land of your fathers. People lived there once that you knew. For Abraham, there's none of that information given. What if it was a rock pile? What if it wasn't good? Abraham didn't have any knowledge. He simply trusted that whatever it was that God was going to give him was going to be right. I don't know if I can wrap my head around that. I don't know if I can imagine having a conversation with my wife like that. Hey, Claire, Abraham says, hey, Sarah, we're leaving. Where are we going? I don't know. Pack the bags, get the kids, get the animals. Oh, and like the hundreds of other people that are actually part of our family. If you look close at the text, there were hundreds of people that Abraham had under his charge. You don't know where we're going? No. Do you know how we're going to get there? No. Do you know what awaits us? No. All right, sounds good. That's not normal. But there's something else. Again, it says, he went out. Out of what? Does anybody remember? Do you remember where he lived? Ur of the Chaldeans. That probably means nothing to most of you. But can I tell you that as far as we can tell in our efforts to study history and archaeology and all of that, as far as we can tell, there was no place as great in Abraham's time as Ur of the Chaldeans. I don't want you to think about Abraham being asked to leave some trailer park in a desert. Not that that's a bad place to live, but he was not being asked to leave some podunk place. He was being asked to leave, according to what we understand, a place where there were split-level, air-conditioned homes, libraries, and schools where logarithms were taught at that time. I don't know how they air-conditioned their homes. Water, things going through the house, and different ways that they'd figured out how to be comfortable. If you wanted to live in a place that was going to be great and productive and make life happy, it was Ur. And God said, go. Look at the next thing. It says in verse 9 that Abraham lived as an alien. That would have been strange. The sight of this nomadic tribe of people coming through the Fertile Crescent. Because you've got Abram, Sarah, and their people with them. The flocks and herds with Lot that eventually would separate. The hundreds of armed soldiers that Abraham would use to go and rescue Lot from the kings of the north. But here comes this nomadic group of people under the charge of Abraham into Canaan. I don't know that he would have been welcomed. I don't know that he would have been understood. I don't know that it would have been comfortable to find places to pasture and to settle. But I want you to key in on the words there. Look at what it says. He lived as an alien in the land of what? Promise. He was stepping into a place where God had said, this is yours, but you don't get to live here like it's yours. Isn't that weird? He lived as an alien in a land of promise, like he was a foreigner, but it was his. And I think if you look closely at this text, and it includes Jacob, it includes Isaac, that they lived in tents. They didn't build houses. They didn't build cities. They didn't build walls. They didn't build all of those things. They lived in tents. for those generations, even though it was their promised land. Maybe I could figure out how Abraham would do it. But Jacob, Isaac waiting his whole life and never getting to have the land. Jacob waiting his whole life, never getting to have the land. At some point, somebody surely is going to throw up their hands and say, I think God was wrong about this. He's not actually given it to us. I don't understand why it's not ours yet. Let's go back to where we came from. But he lived as an alien in the land of promise. Go down to verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. You know what's complicated about that? Is the next part of the verse. It's that God had told him earlier that it was through Isaac that your descendants would be called. All the promises to Abraham about a nation and a people and a number that would come from him that would be greater than the stars of the heaven, he'd been told it will be through Isaac. God, how can you give me what you've promised if you make me take the seed and make it the sacrifice? I don't understand. What great faith it would take to offer up something so precious. And last, he considered that God was able. Every step that Abraham took towards the hills of Moriah, as his son came with him, asking questions, where's the lamb for the sacrifice? As his son carried the wood, like later a descendant of his would carry the wood to the hills of Moriah to die on, because his father would actually offer him for us. Can you imagine what has to go through the mind and heart of a father about to do this thing? The Bible tells us there was only one thing he could think. There was only one thing he considered. Though none of this makes any sense to me at all, God must be able to raise the dead. Because if I kill Isaac, the only hope I've got is for God to bring him back to life and carry on. Which made sense, like the text said earlier, because that's where he got him from in the first place. He had come from one as good as dead. So if Abraham could see God give life from a dead body like his and Sarah's, then he could imagine that God could give life to the dead son in a few minutes. I don't understand all of that. But can you see how these particular events, these four things, would take tremendous faith? All right, let's go back through them. I'm going to make some applications for us. Back in verse 8, by faith, Abraham obeyed. What does this mean for us? Number one, there are some things that we just have to leave. And sometimes those things that we have to leave feel like the place where we want to be. I mean, it's the most comfortable. It's the most productive. It's the most promising. In fact, it may be that this thing that I'm doing, this lifestyle I'm living, this relationship that I'm in, this whatever it is, feels so much like heaven on earth that I just want to stay right here all the time. You know what's better than heaven on earth? Heaven in heaven. You know what's better than a productive land? A promised land. The promised land is always greater than what I deem to be the productive land. And Abraham proved that again, didn't he? When him and Lot had a choice about where to go, Abraham could have used his age and his trump and said, I'll go where I'm going to go. But he said to Lot, you choose where you want to go. And Lot chose the productive rather than the promised. There are some things we just have to leave. Look at the next one, verse 9. He lived as an alien, as in a foreign land. Do you remember in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall finish that." What was that? "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." All right, Abraham went to a place that was his inheritance. "Blessed are the meek, for we shall inherit the earth." Except we have to live here like what? Strangers and pilgrims. Aliens. We have to live as an alien in the land of promise. And I'm not trying to get into a doctrinal discussion here about whether God's going to renovate this current globe or he's going to have the new heavens and new earth will be a different... That's not my point. But my point is there's enough in Scripture to say that this place where we live is really God's world. We sang the song, "This is my Father's world, this is my Father's world." I believe that with all my heart, except I still have to live as an alien and a stranger here. And that takes so much faith, I don't even know how to explain that. To live as a stranger means that I don't practice the customs of the common citizens. I look different. I sound different. I eat different. I'm looked at different. They think it's strange when you don't run to the same excess of dissipation with them and they malign you. Why? Because you're odd. Go down to verse 17. By faith, Abraham offered up Isaac. This one might be a little emotional for me. Dads, which would have been easier? Abraham, offer up yourself. Or Abraham, offer up your child. I prayed and waited a long time for Cade and for Chayton. I thought of different ways to try to illustrate this. If I had one of those boys come up here beside me, and I made him lay out on this table, and I raised a knife, who would react to this? Would you yell, "Stop! Something's wrong. That's not right. God would never ask that." Would you see me quiver? Would you see me wonder? Would you see me... What would you see? You know, there's something about this that obviously is illustrative because God doesn't have him go through with it. There's meant to be some sort of emotional response to this so that we go, "Oh, phew, he didn't do it." But the reason that that, I think, is in Scripture is so that when you finally see Jesus on the wood, bleeding out, silent like a lamb, you have to remember that God gave the thing that was harder for him to give. What does that have to do with us? This illustrates Matthew chapter 10, verse 39. Jesus said, "He who has found his life will lose it, and he who has lost his life for my sake shall find it." Now, lest you think that what he means in that verse has something to do with your personal life, just look at the verses right before it, because it had to do with other people, not you. Moms, dads, wives, children, brothers, sisters, children. I think I said that twice. Those things that become life to me. I'll tell you, when you're alone and you don't have anybody to share it with, if you're an orphan, you have no mother, if you're somebody who would like to be married and you have no spouse, if you're a spouse and you don't have a child, what you think about life is, oh, I finally have found life. But now there's a crossroads. Could I give it up? And maybe it has nothing to do with relationship. In fact, look at Luke chapter 17. Jesus said this on another occasion. Luke 17, verse 33. It's worth reading verse 32, I guess. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to keep his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. Now it's not talking about people so much. In fact, Lot's wife had her husband and her children. Right? Surely that's enough. That's got to be enough. Except she was looking back at the city. And Jesus just got through with the discussion about when, and I think he's talking about the destruction of Jerusalem here, when the Son of Man comes to destroy Jerusalem, is the warning. Don't go back down into your house because you want to get your money. Don't go back down into your house because you want to get your bed spread. I don't care what's important to you in there. There's something more important to get out. Whoever seeks to save his life in the sense of the things will lose it. Did you know that God always asks us, always, when it comes down to choosing, to give up the one thing we find most precious? If you doubt that, look at chapter 18 of Luke, one chapter on. When Jesus meets a rich young ruler, and when the rich young ruler tells him in verse 21, all these things I have kept from my youth, when Jesus heard this, he said to him, one thing you still lack. Maybe it was for Abraham that when God looked down at it, he realized that Abraham had given everything, everything. But what did he give Isaac? What did he give Isaac? God said, now I know, Abraham. So, last point. Go back to the text. Verse 19, he considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he also received him back as a type. God's able. All right, so what we just said was that there may be something in my life, somebody in my life, some lifestyle in my life, something that I'm going to stand at a crossroads and have to choose. And the pain and the difficulty of letting go of this thing to move towards this thing will feel so excruciating until this realization. God is able to raise the dead. Or, how about if I put it like this? Is there anything, that you'll give up in your life to serve God that He'll not be able to repay? That He'll not be able to give you greater than what you gave up? All the faithful talk like that. I am convinced that the glories that are to be revealed to us are not worthy to be compared to what we go through here. How about this? Remember that rich young ruler story? The rich young ruler couldn't do the one thing. He couldn't let it go. Peter understood that. And do you remember what Peter said a few verses later in Luke 18? We've left everything to follow you. What will there be for us? And Jesus said nothing, right? No. He said, if you've left houses or fathers or mothers or wife or children or whatever you've left for the Lord, God will give you more in that life and now. Has God proven this to be true? Job. One of the earliest books of the Bible. A blessed man. Wife, children, money. It all evaporates. In all the trials, the children die, the money is gone, and the question is, will he be faithful? Will he know that God is able? And at the end of the story, what does the Bible say? God restored to Job twofold what he had. I don't know if it was the same wife, but I know he had children and greater riches. Why does God tell us stories like this? Maybe so that by the time we get to Jesus, and Philippians 2 says that Jesus, by faith, went out to a place that God would show him. He didn't regard equality with God a thing to be held on to, but emptied himself, taking on the form of a bondservant. And what did God do? God exalted him and gave him a name that's above every name. Do you think there's anything that you'll give up, anything at all that you'll give up to serve God, that God won't be able to restore? I have one last thought. These four things are everybody's life, everybody's, that's a Christian. The first one, Abraham obeyed when he left. That's the beginning. That's the beginning. The decision to move away from who you were, the decision to die, the decision to be in a new location when it comes to who you belong to. It's everybody's first decision. The second one, living as an alien, that's everyday life. It's everyday life. Every day I live in a place and I feel like an alien and I figure out how by faith to do this day in and day out. Third thing, offered up Isaac. Those are those times in your life where you're at a crossroads, where you're tested. What am I going to do now? I could keep this, find satisfaction, I think, and pleasure, and joy, and comfort. Or I can offer it up and choose this. Everybody's going to have those moments in their life. And the last one, the foundation of all of it, is not what I believe about me. It's what I believe about God. And that's where faith comes from. Do you think Abraham had any delusion at all that he was going to make this work for himself? Do you think so? He couldn't have a kid. He didn't know where he was going. How could he offer the son and still have what God said? There's nothing about this whole story that Abraham ever could have looked at himself and said, I can do this. But what fueled him was, what kept him moving forward was, God can. I sure appreciate your attention. That's the lesson for today. You're not a Christian. We want you to obey because God has called you. God has called us from the world to come to Jesus Christ. All of us understand, everyone in this room understands, that in your mind, what you wrestle with is whether or not it'll be better than what you have. And the answer is yes. And I don't care what you have. You could have everything that you've ever wanted in your whole life and you think life is grand and perfect. And I'll tell you that leaving it to be with Christ in a wilderness is better because of what we hope to find. If you're not a Christian, or if we can help you with anything today that you need that you're struggling with and we can pray for, however we can help you, let us know. We'll come forward as we stand and sing this together.